Hey kids, welcome for another edition of Conspire a Theory. This one's going to be a treat. I have with me Bo from the Bump Podcast. How you doing, Bo?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, this is great because I was able to get in on your podcast a while ago. And I got to admit, hopping on your show has really done a lot for me because it's introduced me to so many interesting, cool people. And I don't know if I've been able to have a chance to get that back to you because people have reached out to me from hearing me on your show. And then because of that, you know, my show has grown just a little bit, you know, thanks to the bump, so to speak, if we could call it that.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's a blessing. I think that's part of it. You know, I hear jokes about podcasters, you know, that 90% of what we do is interview other podcasters. But, you know, it helps the community grow and our audience gets a chance to hear something from, you know, a different perspective that they haven't heard before. And I just think it's just a blessing for everybody. We'll all just come up together, you know?
Yeah, that's what I love is, you know, podcasters talking shop is that what I love is like, you know, aside from just specific interviews, like let's say a specific experiencer or an author or expert is talking about a specific subject. Yeah, that's great. But also I'm one of the few people who actually likes to peek behind the curtain. Like whenever there's like a How's It Made behind the scenes special, I'm always taking a look at those. So for me, when podcasters talk to other podcasters, that's a peek behind the curtain. And I love that. And getting a chance to talk to you, I first discovered you through the Sam Tripoli podcast, Tinfoil Hat, which is pretty much an open source sort of umbrella. Everything, everyone, and anyone shows up on that show, and it's a great, fantastic show. And that's how I discovered you. And then I was able to reach out to you one time because you were looking for people to talk to. And I was like, hey, I'll reach out. I'll talk to this guy. And we had a great show. I had a lot of fun talking to you. Now, tell me a little bit about your show, because apparently BUMP stands for something. It's just not like a clever little bump in the night. It's got a story behind it, if you could please.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah, my show is the BUMP Podcast. BUMP stands for the Believers of the Unexplained Monsters and Paranormal. So it's a little play on words, and of course it ties into BUMP in the night. But I just thought it was fun. It kind of encompassed everything and kept it short and sweet because that's a lot to put on a title for a podcast, you know.
It's really clever. I really enjoy it. Now, let's just go ahead and now that we've gotten past our little pleasantries, let's get into the meat and potatoes because that's what we're here for. Okay, so a lot of the paranormal stuff centers around, you know, spirituality, aliens and fun stuff like that, UFO, Bigfoot and such like that. Now, let me ask you a bit about UFOs and aliens in your experience, in your archives of interviews and stuff like this. What is your take on the UFO phenomenon and the alien phenomenon? And do you think they're related or should they be treated as separate things? What is your opinion?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, Chris, when I first started the podcast, I was under the impression I had my personal opinions about, you know, the whole alien thing. And I always have connected aliens and UFOs. I've looked at them as, you know, one is an entity and one is whatever kind of craft that they're operating. But when I initially started this, I had an opinion that aliens were possibly, and I know this, it was a very generic thing, but I believe that aliens were probably us, our descendants, you know, in the future, and that they at some point had figured out, you know, time travel or whatever, and we were catching glimpses of them visiting the past, you know, to right a wrong or for what, you know, whatever their purpose was of being here, taking a school field trip, whatever. We were just getting to see that. But the more I talk to people, I'm learning that there's not just one species of this, of these creatures. They come in different shapes and sizes, and they seem like they have a purpose. I've had people tell me that they've started to be abducted, and they called on the name of Jesus Christ, and they stopped. They went away. So that kind of opens the door to me as far as a spiritual realm, maybe something nefarious, something dark, something demonic maybe. And then I've had people that's, you know, reported being abducted. I had the lady, her name was Melanie Kirchdorfer. I can't remember now if it was season one or season two, Chris, to be honest with you, but she had come on. My show was the only interview she had ever done, except for being interviewed by Unsolved Mysteries when they did their reboot, like in 2021, I think it was, or late 2020. She was on that show, and she came on my show. I was able to have another one of the guys that were on that episode of Unsolved Mysteries. They talked her into coming on my show, and she explained her experiences, and it was really just, it was heartbreaking. She's dealt with this most of her life. She has vivid memories of being levitated up out of her bed, taken through a window. She remembered being floated over the water of the river, just really far out there things, but totally credible. You know, she was totally believable. These things were traumatic to her. And I threw out the theory that these were just our descendants, because, you know, there wouldn't be a point in doing those kind of things. You know, what it seems more like to me now, not to get too far ahead, but my opinion on the whole alien and UFO thing does go way more into the spiritual side of things. Most of what we've discussed on my show is starting to lead that direction. And I'm not trying to just, you know, make things fit in a box. It's just the longer I've done the show, I'm hitting 3 years soon, about 160 episodes in. And the more I talk to people, I see these patterns and these similarities. Things just seem to be going in a spiritual route. And it's actually kind of alarming, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if I can push back on the whole time travel thing, with all the species and stuff, it makes you think, how many tomorrows does mankind have? If it's like, if especially when they're all intersecting and stuff of that nature, where it's like, you know, and also if there are, you know, quote unquote descendants, then why don't they have any kind of like, I guess, base memory or historical, like connectivity or anything of that nature to us, you know, culturally? You know, they seem like completely alien, you know, to you know, give us the term foreign, when the few that have, that the people that they can remember their encounters, the encounters just come off culturally foreign of that nature. Because even then, you know, we would have like a predicating like a like, you know, cultural norms that, you know, would last millennia and generations of that nature. I mean, like us, we're like, we shake with our right hand. We've been doing that for generations upon generations. Nobody knows why. You know, there's like significance, and it goes back to the ancient days of when we were knights and stuff, that you would your right hand was sort of your hand that you would sheath your weapon with. And, you know, shaking with your right hand was showing that you weren't a threat to the person that you were greeting, you know, of that nature. And of that nature, you know, that is sort of passed on down through the generations. There's no evidence that I've seen of that type of social contagion carried among the foreigners, the foreign presence. And with that, you know, I kind of have to, you know, scruff up on that of the whole, you know, time travelers thing. I people like it. It's romantic, but I just don't, I'm not going to put my eggs in that basket.
Right. Right. And you're smart to not, you know, it was, I think if I would honestly look at myself, you know, at that time, I think I was trying to explain it in a way that doesn't make it like a them versus us kind of scenario. You know what I mean? They can't be that bad if they're our descendants. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, humanizing
everything. Yes. Yeah, I kind of humanized them in a way, I guess.
Trying to keep from othering them. I get what you're coming at. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and it seems like the only commonalities that we seem to have is that, you know, for the most part, we're both bipedal and we both have, you know, symmetry, you know, and of that nature. But then, you know, the more I think of it, the more I really don't know what to make of it, which is why I seek out these experiencers and their experiences, because I'm just so, you know, just so curious about it. Now, let's take a look at specifically the Greys, because for some reason they seem to dominate, like sort of when it comes to like outwardly cryptids, you know, Bigfoot's the big man on campus, but the Greys, I find them fascinating. What do you think they are? I mean, we've discussed about whether or not there are descendants. Now, do you think that they are, because it seems like they work with like a lot of other species. They, in the various encounters that I've heard, do you think that they're either like a drone that you just, you buy a little pill pack and you just leave them in water overnight and then boom, you got you some Greys? Or are they their own species? Or I don't know. What is your speculation and what has your experience in your archives from the interviews that you've had? What has the impression you've been left with?
Sure. As far as the Greys go, it's a very popular theory that they're drones because they're so cold. They're so calculated. They seem to come in, do a job like a little worker bee. You know, but also if you take a look at, you know, history, folklore, these Greys, they're kind of related to the Fae in size, in actions. You know, the Fae, fairies, leprechauns, all the, you know, the little people. All of those things had similarities that these Greys can kind of fit into.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I think Joshua Cutchin has done extensive research into that.
I'll have to check him out. But I think what we're dealing with is something old. You know, I think it's something that's been around for a long time. I think that they have interacted with us and they have popped up in our folklore and our small backwoods stories for millennia. I think it's just currently we call them Greys because, you know, the science fiction world, the space exploration and all that, that's what we tend to give them credit to being from. But I tend to think that those particular entities may not be extraterrestrial at all. I think that they could be fae folk.
Yeah, you do bring up a good point that this could be something old that sort of connects to us somehow. Because one of the things that I've noticed in the lore is that with the abduction phenomenon, they'll do this thing where they'll give us like medical examinations and stuff. And it's like, you know, I mean, I kind of get it, you know, like generational, like you have to, you know, check everybody's blood pressure, weigh them and get how tall they, I get that. But then there's like the evasive stuff where they do the genetic tampering and stuff like this. And you know, we've been told they're looking for something. Well, it's been several generations upon generations that whatever they're trying to do, they should have already had done it by now. It should have already, they should have already had reached their goal within a multi, even if it's a multi-generational plan, something should have come to fruition. I mean, but then of course, I guess I'm sort of putting them in, into trying to fit them in a human box as far as how we handle stuff. But, right. You know, I don't know, that's just what I'm thinking, is that whatever they're after, they should have gotten it by now, but they seem to be prolonging, and this seems to be sort of like a status quo, like, you know, sort of like, this is just what we do type of thing. And I don't, you know, I mean, I don't, I would like to think that there's some rhyme or reason to it, but sometimes I wonder if it's just a prolonged thing where it's like, you know, for them, like maybe a form of purgatory where they're just, you know, that's just what they do. They've been programmed to do that. They don't know why they do it. They just do it to do it because that is their purpose. And, you know, we just happen to be, you know, something that they stick their needles into, you know, as far as we know. But, you know, there could be various other civilizations and stuff like that where they experience the same thing that we do, but we don't know about them because they're off on their planet or dimension or what have you. You know, there could be other civilizations out there experiencing the same phenomena that we do. And I speculate that maybe, you know, these guys, they just do this across the board.
It could be. That could be the case. You know, there are cases that I've heard where these grays seem to work with other species of being, like the tall whites. In that kind of situation, I lean more, again, like I was talking about initially with the aliens in the spiritual realm, and that will bring in genetic modification, but there's a very specific purpose for that. And again, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole yet, but I tend to think that there is a connection between, like, the tall white kind of species, you know, the Nordics, these beautiful beings. I believe there's a connection with them and the days of Noah, so to speak. I don't know if you want to get into all that yet.
Yeah, let's go ahead and segue into the poor. I guess you're talking about like more of Nephilim, sort of demigod, giant type of species that the tall whites could somewhat be a bridge to that.
I feel like these tall whites, the obsession with hybridization that we seem to hear in these abduction cases, the collection of male and female reproductive systems, whatever they need to do, it goes along for me. Like I said, where I sit at now, with everything that I've heard and everything I've researched, it seems like that these aliens are carrying out an agenda that started in the days of Noah, when the sons of God, the fallen angels, they came down Genesis 6. They took wives for themselves. I'm sure them coming to Earth, they were offered wives. They had to have been worshipped like a pantheon of gods. They took these wives, and their offspring were the Nephilim. He says the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also after. I believe that this is the after. This is the continuation in part. The Nephilim, these fallen angels, were breeding. And if you look at extra biblical texts, if you get into like the book of Enoch, you see where these fallen didn't just defile mankind. They defiled everything. Man and beast alike.
Yeah, that's where we get into our minotaurs and other chimeric beasts of lore.
Exactly. And the whole purpose is to stop the messianic bloodline. They wanted to ensure that there is no Christ, right? They wanted to make sure that they corrupt all of God's bloodline. To where Noah was the only one. They said perfect in God's sight, but he was the only one of pure blood at that time. Only man. So they brought on the flood, so on and so forth. I feel like at this point that these different races of alien, or whatever we want to call them, I think that they're doing this hybridization program. I think that they're doing these abductions small scale to either look for bloodlines or to further corrupt bloodlines. Maybe they're trying to build their own army. I don't know. But I feel like there's a definite connection there somewhere.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I could definitely see something along those lines presented, connecting one phenomenon to the tail end of another. Yeah. It also makes me think, I was going to ask you a bit about where do you think the dog man comes from? And then thinking, you know, if we were to rope this all in, you know, it's a very, you know, healthy umbrella that we could probably fit like a dog man like beast. He could be among the many chimeric entities that we see that are genetic. Because whenever I do hear of dogman stories, he's usually, if he's not encountered in the wild, he's encountered on a UFO, and he's security. He's the security guard, the guard dogs for these creatures. Some people speculate, you know, well, when the dogman runs wild, he'll either escape through portals or something of that. And as far as we know, there's I don't know if there's any like distinct origin, because they just popped out of wherever.
Yeah. The dog man, it seemed like all through history, there's been accounts of dog-headed beings, right? You have Anubis in ancient Egypt. Marco Polo came across an island of dog-headed people that yelped and barked and traded with him, though. They were civilized in a way. Medieval depictions of Saint Christopher showed him as a giant with a dog head. So these dog-headed people, these dog men, have been around off and on through history, and then you get into the werewolves and the lycans and all that. But as far as ancient origins, yeah, dogman, Sasquatch, all of it can nestle nicely into this Nephilim abomination, you know? Even the fact that when the flood came and it wiped out these giants on the earth, it wiped out these Nephilim, it says in the book of Enoch that their souls are trapped here on earth. They're not God's creation, so they don't ascend. They were not made for hell. They were not made for Sheol. That was for man at the time. So they did not descend. They're trapped on earth. And those are our demons. They're the unclean spirits. So it works. You know, it fits in there. That's how they, you know, you could see these Bigfoot or these dog men with these spiritual traits. You know, why are they blurry? Why do their tracks stop? You know, do they possess a creature? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to be careful though, Chris, because I don't want to lump them into a box. Because I have a little bit of a pet peeve with people lumping everything into interdimensional. You know, because I feel like that's a really convenient way to just say, oh, they're coming from another dimension, when we have no knowledge of how other dimensions might work.
Yeah, it used to be a thing, like back in the day, but it was seen as too comic booky. And now, because for some reason, people are okay with it now, that it's overpowered the ETH, the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Yep, it has. And I blame Marvel for that, you know. I blame Spider-Man for that, you know, the multiverse and Doctor Strange. And it's like, oh, that is so cool. And it just leaked straight in. And I love, don't get me wrong, I'm a big Marvel nerd. I love it. But it's too convenient. And
I mean, not to get into the cancel culture, but I also blame bad writing, because that's how you cover bad writing. with like, oh, it's a multiverse instead of, you know, because you hire all these people because they're activists and then they write their activism in it and then it doesn't sell. And then you got to add something new. Oh, multiverse.
That's right.
I'll get off my soapbox now. Please.
You're right, though. You're right. You know, they get to scrub that line and come up with something else. And then, you know what else we need? We need a young X-Men. Hmm. Yeah, it's real convenient. But I don't want to do that and necessarily just throw everything into its demons. I don't want to make everything demons, and I don't want to make everything interdimensional. I don't want to make everything interdimensional demons.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with it being a favorite speculation of yours.
Right. And, you know, my worldview, I have a supernatural biblical worldview, and it all ties in for me. Maybe I'm biased, but that's where I see all this stuff coming from. For the most part, I do believe that there are creatures out there. I believe that there are monsters. There's unexplained. But I believe that there is a pretty common ground when you strip it all away.
Hmm. Yeah, I do think that there is something to, I guess, manifestation. Then, if I was to use that to as a coverall to say, oh well, this can explain this because some spirit can then, you know, possess something and then manifest and manipulate it into its knees, or our perception is by form of manifestation, or we're. Our perception is warped to see whatever it is as it prefers to be seen. Because I've heard accounts where people will be in the graveyard, a group, and then they will see something, and then each participant will see something different. One person will see a werewolf. One person will see a zombie-type creature. Another one will see a ghost, and so on.
Perception is a lot of it. What our brain defaults to protect us could be a part of it. Because it is just like us. Like we've both already admitted we've tried to humanize things we couldn't completely understand. You know?
It's we're trying to understand it.
Yeah.
As best we know how to with our limited senses and the limited information that we have.
That's it.
Yeah, I would have to say, you know, and I do like bringing up Dogman because, you know, it is my favorite, and I do feel Bigfoot. He gets enough press already, so you can sit on the sidelines. Don't need you to play
Dogman
today.
Dogman has taken over. Dogman has taken over. He limped in the 80s, you know, a little appearance here in Michigan. Yeah.
East of Bray Road. Linda Godfrey, who had passed recently, you know.
Yes.
God rest her soul. She was a definite, I would have loved to have meet her sometime. Oh, yeah, me too. And she was definitely an inspiration. I remember when I did my Dogman show, I couldn't find any content. So I just looked up and I found, you know, I'm tired of these bad guy Dogman stories. I'm going to find good guy Dogman stories. And I found two examples. And they were Irish lore of, you know, wizards who change themselves into beasts to serve as berserkers for their king. Or I think it was an Irish spirit that is a dogman entity who, you know, he finds lost children in the forest and leads them out. And then he'll leave fish on the windowsills of impoverished families so that they can eat, you know, and it's just sort of this, but the thing is, I need to dig more into that because I found that off of a meme or something called the Wolver. And I need to look more into it to see, find its, or it's supposed to be Irish, but I got to make sure that it's not another Slender Man where it ends up being a creepypasta or something ridiculous. Yeah. Because that's what I'm afraid of, because it has that sort of, you know, too good to be true. But then again, at the same time, you know, I guess more, you know, malevolent type of creatures that are actually good guys. You know, it's in this type of field, you rarely ever run into good guys. And that's sort of my hang up, is that I want to find, you know, the flip side of it. as well. Because sometimes we'll have examples of aliens actually healing people of their cancers and stuff like this, aside from when they're, you know, violating their space and terrorizing and traumatizing people.
Yeah. And see, that's what led me on the, you know, I was trying to look at aliens as maybe they're not all bad, or maybe there's nothing wrong with them when I was younger, because I had so many accounts that I had heard and of them shutting down nuclear silos, they would fly over and just shut it down. And I thought, oh, yeah, they're peaceful. You know, they're trying to stop us from going to war. You know, I was like a naive child. there has to be some stories of good guys. There's a good story of Bigfoot. I know he's not your favorite, but Bigfoot being a good
guy. I just think he's overrated.
The boy, where was he at? North Carolina, I think, a few years ago. Goes missing. He's gone for a couple of days. They find him on the other side of a flooded creek in a thicket, you know, briars and bramble. He's out there totally fine, hung out 2 miles away from home or whatever. Should have drowned just getting over to that area in that high water. They ask him, how'd you get here? And he said, I was with a bear. A bear took care of me.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, of course, we look into that knowing that his limited vocabulary at the time, you know, a bear is whatever he could best describe whatever he encountered.
Exactly.
So whatever force, if it was a Bigfoot or some sort of force, you know, masquerading as a Bigfoot or a bear even, you know, whatever encountered him, you know, definitely, you know, didn't take advantage and just seize him up as just a free meal and just gobble him up.
Right.
Yeah, there's been
something. There was some compassion somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish that somebody would, you know, sit down with that kid and show him a picture of Patty and be like, okay, is this the bear? You know?
it's something like at that young age where, you know, as he gets older, you know, more mature memories are going to wipe that older memory out, unfortunately. So it's going to be something else. So, but you know, that was definitely a good account, and it sounds like almost like a classic Wolver account, if that was it, of the Irish, you know, dogman forest spirit, that it would be something that would be along his lines. Now, if we left the boy with a fish or something, then we would know. You're going to take this home. Here's a fish for you, kid.
Right.
One of the debates that I often see here is, I don't know how much you dig into this, but I just want to get your take on it. Sure. It's flat earth and hollow earth. The sort of asking the question like, you know, are we more than just a ball in spinning around randomly in space? What if there's more to it that, you know, the very reality that we're settling on could be something else? What is your take on those accounts?
It is weird that you asked me this today. I had plans to eventually talk about this stuff on my show, maybe on a Sunday Musings episode, you know, where it's just me for 15 or 20 minutes. I tell you, again, when I started this show, before I listened to anybody else, yep, we're on a ball, we're spinning around, whatever. Things have changed, Chris, I'll tell you that. No, I don't subscribe to flat earth theory. At least not yet. I've had David Weiss on the show.
Yeah, I remember that. I I have issues, but go ahead.
He's one of the biggest shows I've ever had. I did not see that coming. I'm talking thousands and thousands and thousands of downloads and views and tons of comments. He was great to have on. I couldn't jump ship from the ball, you know. I had Josh Munday come on. He's flat earth theorist from a biblical perspective, and he gives a lot of scripture that he's found that he feels supports flat earth theory. I appreciate them. I appreciate both those guys. I love what they do. I respect them. For me, it's still a ball. Mostly. I was driving down the road talking to my wife yesterday, and I'm looking out here at all the trees, and this is something I've never heard anybody say, okay? So this is just off the top of my head. Run with it if you want to. I'm looking out here at all these dead trees, right? Leaves are on the ground. We're in the dead of winter. And I asked my wife, what is dirt? She didn't have an answer. She don't care. You know, she thinks I'm just an idiot for thinking too hard, you know. But dirt, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it the decomposition of leaves and grasses and all that? And it just piles up over time, right? It all just breaks down into like a little micro mulch, and it gets eaten up by bugs, and it gets processed, and that's where we get dirt, right? It's soil.
Well, I think there's like a distinct difference between dirt and soil, whereas soil is sort of like a nutrient type of thing. It's specifically tree, like plant life, whatever has it. And dirt, you know, our skin cells that we shed and stuff, that quote unquote is technically dirt. So everything is shedding. It's whatever. It's dead compost, whatever, that becomes a collective dirt. But as far as, you know, dirt and I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but that's how it's been explained it to me, that I'm understanding it.
And that works. That works for me, because that's part of my point. I asked her, I said, so how, if this is what dirt is, if this is what soil is, if it takes this to grow plants, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have it,
yeah,
to grow plants in general terms. Then how did the first plants grow on this rock that just exploded in space, landed here at this exact spot, this exact point, spinning around, trapped for some reason on this axis? Wouldn't we just be a shiny rock like every asteroid that comes in? I've never heard of one. I've never heard of a meteor that has dirt on it. There's nothing growing on the moon. It's trapped out there, you know, and maybe I'm just really simple. Maybe I don't understand science at all. I'm okay with that. But it seems like it can't be just a product of the Big Bang. It cannot possibly have started from just a shiny space rock and just in an atmosphere where there is no oxygen, right? Somehow we got this layer around us. Some people call it the firmament. Some people call it an ozone layer or whatever.
A pressurized zone conveniently right next to a vacuum with no physical barrier.
Yes. How did that happen? Where, okay, there's oxygen on this side of the bubble. On the other side, you're floating, gasping, okay? Yeah. But on this side of the bubble, everything's worked out. I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah,
I don't. I believe everything is
the thing is the establishment. This is my when I talk to the flat Earth people, the establishment where I kind of am in their camp, where I have a foot in their camp, is that the establishment's answer to everything is just, well, it's complicated and you're stupid for questioning us. That's their official answer, not, you know, because everything else can be, you know, explained and stuff like that. And as far as what came here, you know, I mean, that's where the people speculate the what is it, the, I forget what it's called. I think it's called panspermia, where a meteorite with stuff, genetic whatever, came down and hit us and then was able to grow in the soil. The nutrient-rich soil was able to gain nutrients, and then thus life happened or something of that nature, where it's just a collection of ingredients, and then lightning struck it, and then bam, life. Multicellular life, which then became, you know, multicellular life, blah, blah, and so on. And then fish learned to walk.
Right.
Or fish turned into monkeys, and then the monkeys learned to walk.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the biggest crock I ever heard, man. Like, for that to be accepted. But for me, you know, I'm squarely in the Christian camp, obviously.
Yeah.
But for this... For this to be acceptable, that this primordial ooze turned into a person, and it all happened in a really, really short period of time. You know, just a couple million years, really, is what it took. If that's accepted, but we can't accept creation. I don't know. I even tried to marry the two at one point where, you know, God created this and then let it evolve. I'll take that, you know, it's whatever. But I cannot accept that the earth is this simple. I can't wrap my head around it. I'm closer. I would believe flat earth before I would believe the what's pushed at us.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean... And the thing is that, I mean, I guess sort of, you know, and academia has its hands full already now with the multi-gendered pyrofoxes that are taking it over. So I don't think they're in a position to answer any questions at this point because they're busy. They're busy.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But as far as the miracles of life and stuff of this nature, let me just ask you this. What is it with the human womb that is so magical that everybody wants a piece? The Nephilim want it. The space aliens want it. The demons and ghosts, they want it. For some reason, the human female womb is this sort of furnace of life, of creation, that it's like everybody seeks it out. The Bigfoot, some say they like to keep wood-wise, where they breed with human women. I don't know how that's special, but I've heard that there are some stories of that out there, that everybody likes to snag up our women and stuff like that. The giants like to grab them and use them for procreation purposes of that nature. And it's like, you know, what is it that you know, pretty much anyone can do anything with it. But for some reason, you know, when we try to do stuff with it, we have to go through labs. We have to create man bear pigs through chimeras and petri dishes. We have to do all this extra work. But everybody else, they just have to show up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm presenting something obnoxious to you or not. But I'm just, I don't know where to take it.
No, you're right, man. You're right. There's something to it. There is. I don't know. But as soon as you said that, you know, what is it about that that's so special or whatever? The first thing came to me was that 80s movie, Earth Girls Are Easy.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to say it because that would be too easy. But you hit the nail on the head.
I don't know, man. But yeah, it has a tendency to influence a lot of people, influence a lot of things in history, and the power of a woman.
Yeah, but of course you ask them to open up a pickle jar and everything has to, the world has to stop.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
well,
it's like you have the power of creation, the power of life, the power of all existence. But that pickle jar, it's your only barrier to happiness until you can figure out how to pop that thing open.
that's what our whole existence has come down to. That is why man still exists. We get to open pickle jars and pick up heavy things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about all that stuff. It's just, and can I explain to you for just a few moment one of my grievances with hollow with flat Earth?
Yeah, man,
Hollow Earth is
for real.
fine. Hollow Earth is romantic.
Oh, yeah, I love Hollow Earth.
Hollow Earth has lore. Hollow Earth has fiction. The Arthur Conan Doyle, what is it? The what is it? Conan, Adventures of Conan. He went to the Hollow Earth. Everybody had journeys to the center of the Earth. It's sought out. It's romanticized. I want that for Flat Earth. But when I look at the Flat Earth community, they are stuck on prove it, prove it, prove it, prove it, prove it, prove it. You know.
Right.
They're so hung up on proving everything, and it's like that's their caveat is run. It's like keeping up with the academic pushback is sort of their motivation. Like they're motivated by spite, by not being accepted by academia, that keeps them alive. And then they're just on to, prove it, prove it, prove it. Because every single time I see any kind of argument or debate, it's always the flat earther flips the fuck out, and then they're all, rrr. And then
Oh, yeah.
they're it's because of they're asking someone to prove their stance because someone disagrees with them or challenges them or on something. What I would like is to get past that, and I want to see flat earth romanticized. I want to see comic books and movies and stories and fun shit. I want to see people play fictionally with the concept of flat earth and do something fun with it.
Yeah.
But the community, from what I've seen, like I said, it's deadbolted itself on a specific stance, and I feel it's that's done primarily out of spite to keep itself alive. But I don't know what it will take to get to that next hump.
Yeah, man. You bring up a good point. There is a lot of room for that if they would just lighten up a little bit. People would be more willing to entertain those theories if it wasn't such an argument. Like if you look at those maps, Dave Weiss, he pulled maps out of everywhere. One was like an ancient Japanese map, I think he said, where it showed, and it was like so cool. It showed all the continents, flattened out in a circular pattern, and then Antarctica is no longer a continent down there. It is an ice wall that goes all the way around, and it's broken up in areas, and there's gaps in this ice wall that were just floating in this bowl of soup, right? And in those gaps, if you go through beyond that ice wall, there are other continents out there. And he said, "Oh, look at these extra territories. Extraterrestrial region. Maybe that's where these things come from." And I'm like, I loved that.
Yeah, that's
I'm like,
brilliant.
yeah, let's explore that.
Yeah, what?
How big is its vastness? We're all on this watery plane. Yeah, talk to me. Give me that. But then it comes with some snarkiness and then a little bit of insult. And then, you lose your audience. You
Yeah.
can't. you can't bully somebody into believing your way. Yeah, and David did a good job by not being a bully, but he's very, very forceful.
Yeah, he can be very abrasive. I mean, some people, the biggest criticism is he's just there to sell his app, which, you know, I bought a copy of it and, you know, yeah, it's fine. It's cool. It's a cool toy, you know, but I'm not going to berate the guy because he wants everybody to spend $5. You know, I can't get into that camp. But on the other hand, what he does do that I do applaud him for and a lot of the flat earthers for is they have a strong community. Because a lot of these apps they have friendship apps. So basically they're back end dating apps. So that way they could all, you know, meet and you know, hang out and you know, just flat on and do all that stuff. But with that strong community, I would like to see novels come out, fictionalized novels that have fun with it. But what I'm projecting that they're worried about is if they present any kind of fictionalization, that then people are going to say, well, oh, it's just dumb cartoons then. So you're invalid now. And I wonder if that's what they're afraid of. And I would like to talk to a flat earther about this, but then, you know, I'm worried about the abrasiveness, you know, if I can approach it to them or something like that. I don't know. It's just something that is rolling around in my head that I haven't really, you know, how am I going to bring that up to someone? You know what? I don't know what to do with it. If you're in the position where you could ask about that, I'd love to see you approach it as well, you know, and just get an answer for me if you come to it first. But it's just a thing that I don't know what to do with it at this time. But in the future, I'll probably try to settle it down. You know, when I can find myself a flat earther that'll, you know, be willing to talk to me about that. Because this is a funny story, a one off. Did I tell you about the time I ran into a flat earther through divine intervention?
No, I don't believe you did.
I don't know if I told this on your show, but I wanted to interview a flat earther like last year or the year before so badly, you know, that I didn't know where to go or who to talk to, because it seemed at that time flat earth was hot and approaching these guys was very difficult to nigh impossible because they all had huge fan bases and stuff like this. So I wasn't a big show. They're not going to want to talk to me. And I actually prayed to God. I said, please, God, give me a flat earther or something. Just give me something. And then I got an email from some guy hawking his book. And it was, you know, it was about, I think it was something like the Morning Star or something like that. It was a book about flat earth written from the perspective of Satan. And it was written very, you know, snarky as hell. I mean, because the guy got the character of Satan down really good as far as because I would like read a page and then I'd roll my eyes and I'll go, oh God, because of how snarkily he wrote the book, how condescendingly he wrote the book. I'm like, oh geez, I got to take a break. And then I read another page. It's like, oh God, I got to take a break. And then he had written me and I think that what he had done is he had written me, you know, as part of an email blast, he was just blasting as many shows as he could get onto. To get his himself out there. And I'm like, ah, thank you, God. Thank you. I got my interview. We had a great interview, a great conversation. I think there was only one hiccup when I kept saying, when I misspoke and said your numbers instead of saying establishment numbers. So it sounded like I was accusing him of something and he got defensive on it. But other than that, it was a great interview and I loved it so much. You know, I had so much fun with it. You know, I mean, I'm still a globetard, but it was a good conversation.
Oh yeah.
And that's where, you know, that's where I say, you know, it's like, you know, I prayed to God and God gave me a flat earther. it's just, I guess, you know, I could write it off as just a fun synchronicity, but it is wild for me. I just think it is just so wild.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, and you're right. A flat earther, if that's not a derogatory term by now, I mean, we might get canceled for using that term. Maybe we should say, enthusiast of level ground or whatever.
a plainsman or something.
Yes, a plainsman. No, I can't say man. A plains person.
Yeah, a plains person. Yeah.
A plains person.
A person of planes. Not the airplanes, but more the linear planes.
They make for great conversation, man. You know, yeah. If everyone had something they were as passionate about as flat earthers are with their theory, then we'd be getting some stuff done around here.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I want them to get over that hurdle and focus that on creating fiction, because I want to see those adventures. I want to see those, you know, those comic book marvelous type of things that deal with that concept, you know.
Oh, yeah. Going to the edge, man. Yeah. Over the edge.
And, you know, like going over and then like seeing, you know, like, oh, there's a continent that's like that's a representation that's almost a copy of Middle Earth. And then there's another one that's like with all the grays on it. That's where they're from, or something of that nature. You know, have fun with it. Something where we could play with it, you know, type of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think we're reaching the end here. This has been a fantastic conversation. I got to thank you, Bo, for coming on, talking to me, Bo Kennedy of the Bump Podcast. This has just been a fantastic show. Thank you so much. Let everybody know where they can find you and what you've been up to lately.
Absolutely. Yeah. First, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I've loved the conversation. I could talk about this stuff all the time. So if ever I get the opportunity to come back, just holler at me, man. And I'd love to.
Certainly.
But everybody can find me anywhere you listen to podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Podbean, or whatever it's called. There, any podcast player should carry the Bump Podcast by now. I'm on YouTube. I don't have as many followers or subscribers on YouTube as I would like. I'm still under 1,000 on there for some reason. It's like that just won't grow. But social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, I'm on all of it. I try to be accessible. If you had an experience that you'd like to share with anything that would fit under the umbrella of unexplained monsters or paranormal, you can reach me at thebumppodcast@gmail.com. Or private message me on Instagram. That seems to work pretty good. I get a lot of traffic through that. As far as currently working on, I'm just steady moving on the show. It's a weekly show, so I'm constantly out here, you know, answering emails, working with people. But I also have a little bit of a side project that I'm part of a team on. There is a there's another podcast called the Sword and Staff Podcast. It's two guys, Josh and Richie. They tackle things that they like to talk about. You know, it's also their Christian-based show. But they were in a series, which is crazy popular. It's on YouTube. Now it's on YouTube. It wasn't at first. But it's called Dark Holler. If you like Hellier, which a lot of people are familiar with Hellier, check out Dark Holler. It's a great series. But they've started a new project. Same team of people. I had a cameo on Dark Holler, but I'm part of the team here for this new project. It's called Shadow Appalachia. There's some trailers out about it. I don't want to get too deep into it. I'm not going to name drop, but we got some pretty popular people that's going to be working with us on this show. It won't take too much of a search to find out who all is going to be on it, but I'm out of my league on some of this stuff. But Shadow Appalachia, that's the project. It will probably be releasing some stuff this fall, so that'll be something to watch for. But this year, I plan to do a lot more conventions and shows, so I'll try to be out there on the circuit somewhere to get in touch with people.
Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you for coming on, and have fun, guys, and we'll talk to you later.